Cemetery News Now.
Welcome to another episode of Telemetry News Now. We are at the tail end of May 2025. A ton of headlines to cover today. But before we get into it, Justin, you are at AutoCon 3 in Prague, I believe. Is that right?
I am, yeah. Well, this is the first day of the actual conference. We just wrapped up the workshops yesterday. It's well attended. A lot of excitement. So I'm excited to see what the next couple days hold.
Very good. Network Automation Forum does a great job with these events, and certainly we are a friend of that organization and look forward to the next one in the United States next fall. So let's dive in. We do have a lot to cover, and Justin, why don't you kick us off today?
Sure. So first up is an article from Network World titled, Oracle to spend $40 billion on NVIDIA chips for OpenAI data center in Texas. So, you know, we're covered a lot of different news articles on the podcast in the past about other companies and their investment. This one is specifically, as the title implies, OpenAI scaling out their environments to be able to continue to train, presumably ChatGPT and some of the, some of the more advanced models that they're coming out with and OpenAI is coming out with. But yeah, I thought it was interesting. It's actually Oracle that's buying the chips and they're building the data center for OpenAI. So Oracle is buying 400,000 of NVIDIA's GB200 GPUs, putting those into a data center that they're actually building and going to manage and maintain in Texas. And then they're leasing that compute power, basically those GPUs, back to OpenAI so that they can do their training on top of it. This investment is actually falling under the umbrella of the Stargate project. If folks remember,
right, yeah.
You know, shortly after Trump was elected, he announced the Stargate project, which is the United States government's $500 billion investment in AI infrastructure. So this investment that OpenAI and Oracle are making in these GPUs from NVIDIA is actually falling under the Stargate project. So kind of an interesting collaboration there, I guess, if you will.
Yeah. And it highlights this idea of the importance being placed on AI development in general, obviously from the government with this initiative that you just mentioned. And then also just organizations like Oracle spending huge amounts of money. This particular deal is costing them more than their entire cloud revenue from last year, 2024. I mean, this is a lot of money, a lot of investment, a big move. And it also speaks to the foundation of advancement right now is clearly scale. There's research and development being done in creating more efficient workflows and models that operate more efficiently at a smaller scale. We've talked about that on this show, but this is clearly an indicator that scale still reigns supreme in our advancement moving forward with AI. Even in a practical sense, considering that many of the models that we talk about when we say AI, these foundational models, are models as a service. So they are, you know, huge scale, and then they, you know, you hook into them via API. You're not building them in your basement. And then, of course, the facility itself, that's really interesting. I mean, it's going to be a couple of years to stand up, and then the multiple gigawatts of power. I don't remember what the article said. So again, speaking to scale in particular. Now, did you read anything, perhaps in another article researching, if there was any concern about like the power grid, you know, in the state of Texas in this case?
That wasn't actually brought up in the article, but I mean, I'd have read other articles where that's always an ongoing concern. I mean, it hasn't been that many years ago that during the summertime, Texas had some rolling brownouts, right?
Exactly,
because of the power demand on the grid. And when it gets hot in Texas, which, you know, there's three or four months where it gets super hot in parts of Texas, right? So the air conditioning puts a lot of load on the grid. And then you got all these data centers that are running all these GPUs that are putting load on the grid. So presumably that's going to be a concern. The other thing, Phil, that we didn't talk about that I pulled out of this article that I thought was really interesting is Microsoft is an investor in OpenAI, right? And there's been a really tight collaboration historically between OpenAI and Microsoft, but it's Oracle doing this data center. So presumably this reduces OpenAI's dependence on Microsoft. So they're kind of diversifying who they're, you know, who they're doing business with a little bit here. So that's kind of an interesting development as well.
Yep, absolutely.
All right, moving on to our next article from CNBC, Salesforce is acquiring data management company Informatics for $8 billion. If you haven't heard of Informatics, Salesforce actually tried to acquire them a few years ago. The deal fell through. Informatics has struggled a little bit, and their share price has come down a little bit. So Salesforce came back in, was able to acquire it for $25 in cash per share, which equals the $8 billion purchase price. This is actually the largest deal that Salesforce has done since they bought Slack back in 2021 for $27.7 billion. So,
yep, I remember that.
Yeah, a couple of the other big acquisitions you may or may not recall, Phil, were Tableau back in 2019. That one was 15.7. And then they bought MuleSoft back in 2018 for 6.5. So, you know, Salesforce has a history of these large software company acquisitions, and presumably they'll be integrating it into the CRM, which is their kind of flagship product. But interesting that it has been a while since they've made a major acquisition like this, but they're putting down a lot of money for this company, and it, you know, really focuses on high scale data for being able to look at, presumably, I'm not all that familiar with informatics, but presumably like large data sets for mathematical data and so forth. So it'll be interesting to see how this ties into their CRM.
Yeah, certainly a lot of structured data, but that's not all that we use in business intelligence. And so we're talking about large scale data management, which is the lifeblood of what Salesforce is all about, and the idea of the CRM and concept of business intelligence. So this is clearly a complementary technology, and they're probably going to see, I think, a return on investment pretty quickly, especially as they start implementing AI technologies that require.
Yeah, that was the angle I was wondering about, is are they going to start using this data to train on AIs? It's basically just them buying a big data set that they can train on AI to help their sales teams, who are their customers, better do like targeted outreach? Or what do you think the use case is in this long term?
Yeah, well, I mean, as far as purchasing the company, will they then turn around and train models on that data set that they acquired as part of the acquisition? I don't know. And I don't know if that would be necessarily the main goal either, because a lot of the stuff that you want to do is going to be customer specific. And so it's going to be contextually relevant to individual customers, although there's a lot of overlap. So maybe I'm wrong. But I do think that it's the processes, workflows, and mechanisms in the overall data pipeline and data, you know, architecture, and the way that they're going to able to integrate that into how their underlying data warehouse and data lake and all that kind of stuff and data swamp, if you're not keeping things neat and tidy, underpin the technology of what Salesforce does, you know? And so, yeah. And on top of that, you build your business intelligence workflows, whether it be relatively quote unquote basic statistical analysis stuff or, you know, very advanced AI and ML stuff, you know? So in this case, I think the idea, yes, is definitely to strengthen the AI capabilities and AI powered products, right? They have, what is it called? Agent Force.
Yeah. And they did say it was going to be part of Agent Force. Just the details on what exactly that means is a little bit lacking in the article from CNBC.
Yeah, those things kind of trickle out, you know, as the integration. I say integration like it's a small thing, but it's a big deal. So we'll see, especially when we're talking about, you know, data pipelines and integrating that kind of stuff, not to mention the actual, you know, human beings that work there. So we'll see.
Moving right along, the next article is from AT&T's newsroom. AT&T to acquire Lumen's mass market fiber business. So first, a couple articles we'll talk about here in the telecom world, where one telecom company is acquiring the assets of another one. This is essentially Lumen's broadband service, the fiber service that they sell mostly to businesses. So you can think of like enterprise businesses that the Lumen team would sell fiber optic connectivity to those. That's the assets that they're selling off here to AT&T. It includes a total of about 1 million fiber customers and reaches more than 5 million fiber locations across 11 different states in the U.S. Pretty big footprint fiber that AT&T is buying for Lumen for $5.75 billion is the acquisition price on this one.
Did you catch how, like, the scope of how many new customers this would reach?
The only thing I could surmise from this is they did say that there's 4 million fiber locations that reaches 1 million customers. So presumably there's like another 3 million buildings that the fiber is connected to that aren't currently customers for them. So, you know, what I take away from that is their AT&T sales team can now go out to these 3 million buildings that are presumably lit up that have their fiber connectivity into them and try and sell them service where they don't currently have service today. That, I think, is the attractive thing to AT&T for this, is it gives them, you know, some buildings and some reach that they didn't currently have with their existing assets.
I mean, is this a significant enough? I mean, obviously, that we're talking about $5.75 billion, so I understand that the actual scope of the purchase is large. But the actual benefit financially to AT&T, is it really that significant? Or do you think this is more of like a long-term play here? Obviously, everything is going to be long-term in the sense of it's an investment, and you're talking about infrastructure, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That has to be a long-term endeavor just because of the nature of what providers do. But what do you think there? Because it feels like it's not immediately that beneficial to AT&T.
Well, I think it's the bigger picture, right? So they're doing their own investment and burying additional fiber. In fact, one of the statements from the article was AT&T now expects to reach approximately 60 million total fiber locations by the end of 2023. So that's only 5 years from now, right? So over the course of the next 5 years, they, you know, expect, in addition to these assets they're now going to get from Lumen, they're building a lot more of their own to where they'll be in 60 million total fiber locations, which will roughly double what they have today. So today they're at about 30 million. They're bringing in these 4 million locations from Lumen's assets, and then they'll continue to expand, well, I guess organically, putting fiber in the ground to get to additional locations to bring their total up to 60. So I think it's just part of a bigger investment where they're just trying to continually expand their footprint.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And there is regulatory approval that will be pending.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Considering this was just announced, that's going to be sometime next year, 2026, probably toward the end of the year. So
yeah,
there is some time before all these things go through. And certainly does seem like a buy and hold growth strategy in this case. Yeah.
Well, and it'll be interesting to see because, like, since we've had a major telecom acquisition like this, we've had a change in leadership in the White House, and we have a new FTC chairman. So it'll be interesting to see if they take a different stance on some of this stuff than previous administrations have. Whether that's good or bad, you know, I'll leave that exercise to the listener. But I have a feeling, you know, this will be an interesting test for whether the government allows an acquisition like this to go through, or if they see it as anti-competitive, right? Because now Lumen's no longer competing with AT&T in these 4 million locations to provide service to these customers. So definitely be an interesting one to keep an eye on. All right, moving right along, yet another acquisition in the telecom world, cable company Charter and Cox agree to merge. Again, this one, just like the previous one, has to go through regulators. So we'll have to wait and see whether it makes its way through the regulators. But in principle, Charter and Cox have agreed to merge their two companies. The deal is values Cox, their portion of the assets, at $34.5 billion, in line with Charter's recent value. So they're basically mergers of equals for, you know, lack of a better, at least roughly equal. The brand that they're going to keep around is actually going to be Charter Spectrum brand. So the Cox brand will actually go away. They'll keep the Charter Spectrum brand and operate all the assets under the umbrella of Charter, even though it's technically a merger of the two different companies. So I think this one will be slightly different in the way that the regulators will view it, because cable operators don't really compete with one another. They have their own operating area that they operate out of, right? So, Phil, I don't know who you have in your area. I'm in Charter footprint myself, but there's no other cable operator, you know, in my area in St. Louis. It's not like there's three of them that are competing with each other, right?
Yeah,
they pretty much have their own monopolies that they operate within. So this one is probably more likely to get regulatory approval. It doesn't really affect competition. Now, the reason I say it doesn't really is because they do have things besides just the cable coming into your house. You know, at least I think of when I think of these cable operators these days, they're doing mobility, they're doing all kinds of different services, right? And so some of those services, they do actually have some competition, and there could be some anti-competitive angles that the government will want to look at.
Yep. And we are looking at a mid-2025, which is right around the corner. So I agree with you. This is probably going to be a quick run through any kind of regulatory bodies to get that approved and then finalize the merger. And I did see that the CEO of Charter, Chris Winfrey, is going to lead the combined company. Although, I mean, I have to assume that Cox's leadership is going to have some sort of roles on various boards and things like that, you know, when all is said and done.
Yep.
That's how those things go.
Yep.
Okay, moving on from Fierce Network, dated May 20th, so about a week ago, Arista is reportedly considering a $1 billion acquisition of VeloCloud. That's Broadcom's SD-WAN business, which they acquired just a couple of years ago in 2023, and which was first acquired by VMware before Broadcom bought VMware. There's a lot of going on there. And prior to that, you might remember VeloCloud as one of those more prominent SD-WAN startups when like they were, everybody was talking about SD-WAN maybe almost 10 years ago. Now, analysts are saying that this is going to benefit both Arista and Broadcom. That's kind of how these things work. It's supposed to be a win-win. So that's sort of the point of these kinds of deals. And it's going to strengthen Arista's position in, yeah, it's a pretty competitive SD-WAN market. It's been consolidating over the past few years for sure, but I think it's still pretty competitive. And that, to me, it makes sense because Arista would be directly expanding into the enterprise market, which I, you know, we've kind of been seeing happening lately, and then therefore going head-to-head with other networking vendors. You know, think Cisco, for example. Now, in my opinion, VeloCloud has always had kind of a strong market presence. It's a solid SD-WAN platform. I remember doing a 4-day VeloCloud training ahead of a big project that I had back when I was working with VARs. I was impressed. The thing is that Arista's current SD-WAN product is technically functional. They have an SD-WAN product, but it kind of lacks features, and it really, you know, that makes it not be very competitive in what many consider a mature market segment at this point. So I think integrating VeloCloud would give Arista a big advantage. They'd be combining their strong routing capabilities, obviously their data center switching capabilities, with VeloCloud's mature, I guess you call it established, you know, very feature-rich SD-WAN technology. That's the Arista benefit. Broadcom, on the other hand, it seems to be moving away from SD-WAN, and according to analysts, they view it as kind of peripheral to its core focus on like cloud infrastructure, virtualization, that kind of stuff. So they're shedding lower priority, perhaps lower revenue businesses. Maybe that is a mistake. I don't know, but that's kind of the idea here. So these kinds of acquisitions have all sorts of disruptions, right? So we're going to see the disruptions to personnel, business strategy, and all that. In this case, probably most with VeloCloud employees. So if this does go through, which we're still going to see, we'll see the ramifications of that, I'm sure, on social media and the Slack channels that we're in, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think this one, I always thought it was interesting that VMware acquired VeloCloud to begin with. I agree with what the analysts are saying. It seemed like a little bit of a departure from a company that you consider to be more of a cloud virtualization type of a company. Now, they had a lot of network assets, right? They had Nicira that they acquired, which became basically their network virtualization, called NSX, product that they had within their portfolio. So they had some other networking, but it was very much focused on inside of the data center. So the acquisition of VeloCloud, I always thought was a little bit strange, but it seemed to be working okay with them. But I can see now that Broadcom has acquired the VMware assets, and presumably in order to make that deal make sense, they have to get some money from some of those assets by spinning them out or shutting some things down that just don't make sense going forward. Like, that's how you get the quote unquote synergies when you acquire another company, right? You have to figure out how to make it all make more money together than they did separately, right? So I think Broadcom getting, what did they say was the actual acquisition cost here? About $1 billion is what they're going to get out of this,
right,
selling it to Arista. So, you know, that helps them recoup some of the costs that they paid for VMware to acquire it. So, yeah. And I think, you know, Cisco has Viptela, and Arista, like you said, doesn't really have a strong competitive SD-WAN solution. So I think from Arista's perspective, it makes perfect sense to really strengthen their product portfolio to better compete against Cisco in the enterprise by bringing in VeloCloud to compete against Viptela.
Well, that assumes that they want to compete in the enterprise, right? And I think that's the key here, is that Arista, who, you know, for years and years was like a foundational technology in data centers, especially larger data centers. And especially when, you know, their platform lends itself to more programmability and openness, which, you know, has been changing among all the vendors in recent years, but that's kind of where they were for a while. And I really do think that it's clear with other platforms, not just this acquisition of VeloCloud, that they are expanding into the enterprise market as well and thinking about how to, and that's how you make money. I mean, you can't just stay focused completely on one little sliver of the market and then just sit there. I guess you can if you want to be on cruise control, and there's some companies that do that, but you always need to be thinking of growth, new markets, and expansion. So I think this is a move in that direction into the enterprise world. Keep in mind, though, that it's not like they're slowing down in the data center space. I mean, Arista is one of the prominent switching players in the AI workload data centers now, too. So they are working with organizations like the UEC and with very, very big prominent customers, web scale customers, even in designing and then, you know, fitting these AI data centers. So they're certainly trying to capture revenue for more markets without abandoning, you know, their core, their foundation.
Well, I think they've only just begun in the AI data centers, Phil, because like they, you know, a lot of that infrastructure is still InfiniBand, right? A lot of people are buying into the closed ecosystem from NVIDIA and buying Mellanox, InfiniBand equipment to put into those AI data centers. But I think over time, the more people start doing this, the more people are going to be, you know, happy with Ethernet, want to see Ethernet, the more the UEC stuff rolls out and Ethernet catches up with some of the things that InfiniBand can do in those environments, you're going to start to see more open architectures for AI fabrics. And I think that's where Arista will really start to see the benefit, because that drives huge traffic on the switches, huge volumes of ports and ASICs, and, you know, the next evolution of silicon. So yeah, I think their data center revenue is going to continue to explode over the next few years, in addition to this acquisition of the VeloCloud assets.
But it doesn't hurt to hedge your bets. So here we are.
No, of course not.
All right, moving on from the Extreme Networks newsroom, also on May 20th, Extreme Networks has launched new capabilities with Extreme Platform One. One is all capitalized, so that makes it extra fancy. And it makes it the first enterprise networking platform to integrate conversational, multimodal, and agentic AI. That's the claim, and I haven't cross-referenced all of those claims yet against every networking vendor out there. But, you know, we can say safely that this is a big step forward in applying the latest AI technologies to networking. Now, Platform One, as it's called, is in limited availability, and according to Extreme, aims to simplify and automate network operations by eliminating silos between networking and security, significantly reducing manual tasks and enhancing visibility and control. That's the blurb from their site. So it's a little bit ambiguous, but clearly it's the idea of we're using AI, probably some underlying traditional ML models, to surface some insight in the data and the telemetry in order to do some sort of root cause analysis, probably, hence the agentic workflows and that sort of thing. And then when they say enhancing visibility and control, my guess is that we're going to start seeing some ability to push config, perhaps some auto remediation. You know, we're going to have to dig into it to see when it comes out. But I mean, ultimately, what they say is that it features AI-powered diagnostics, real-time dashboards, intuitive workflows, deep network visualization. They are talking about security, they are talking about the network, and they even mentioned simplifying their licensing model. We'll see about that, but they have had the platform adopted by over 130 customers thus far, and we'll see general availability in Q3 of this year, so later this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think they've had some amount of observability and automation in the platform for a while, but being able to bring AI on top of that, especially when, you know, they kind of vertically stack this and integrate it, right, makes a lot of sense. And I really like the idea of like the access control, right? So being able to run AI, look for malicious traffic in presumably your data center is what we're talking about here, because that's where Extreme is the strongest, right, is in the data center. So if I've got, you know, some sort of malicious traffic in my data center, whether it's north, south coming in and out of my data center or east, west within my data center, being able to detect that, send down updated firewall filters and be able to block that traffic in the data center, that actually makes some sense to me. I can kind of see where the security piece of this would come in. So it'll be interesting to see where this goes. I have a feeling customers who are in a multi-vendor environment are going to struggle for this. I'm assuming that this product works really well if you have Extreme switches, but if you have Arista's or you have Cisco or you have some other data center switches in your environment, I'm guessing it probably works less well for mixed vendor environments, but
yeah,
who knows?
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, in my mind, as a former operator and engineer, I do think that having some sort of like orchestration platform that runs a block of your network is still great.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Okay, so I use this for all my data center stuff, but then I end up using this for all my WAN routers or my firewalls.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I've heard people decry like, oh, you know, look at that. You have to touch multiple things. It's like, well, so what? You're not touching 850,000 devices. You're touching your five different orchestration platforms, you know, your firewalls and then here for your whatever. And so I think that's still great. And we're going to talk about this in the next headline, I know, because we're going to talk about Cisco certifications and vendor neutral and vendor agnostic and all that. But, you know, the idea that you can have a vendor, networking vendor, develop some sort of orchestration platform, whether it's using AI or not, and then have it be completely vendor agnostic or your vendor agnostic white box environment. I think it's kind of a pipe dream. And I also think there's really no huge market for that. Maybe it's just my naive experience, Justin, but I have never met a customer that was anxious to run eight different switch brands in their data center. Sure, They'll run like a brand in their data center and a completely different brand for their firewalls or SD-WAN solution, you know, like, again, like the network blocks, right? Mm-hmm. But never like eight different brands in the data center itself, except for some one-offs, except for some one-offs. In that rack over there, we have these couple switches for this, you know, consultant or whatever, that kind of thing.
Or if you build it in blocks, right? Maybe I have a few rows that are one vendor that was my legacy architecture, if you want to call it that. And then when I went from core and access switching L2 VLAN trunked network, I switched vendors and now I have a VXLAN EVPN architecture and I've switched vendors, right? I could see keeping those separate and having separate architectures for, you know, the legacy until some of that stuff is phased out and so forth. But I agree with you, like building an ongoing design and architecture that just swaps out from one vendor to another is, I've never seen it done unless customers are doing white box. Right. And doing something like Dell Sonic, right? That's the whole purpose behind having some of that kind of stuff is that literally the hardware itself doesn't really matter to you. It's abstracted away.
But. Exactly. Exactly. So interesting advancement from Extreme Networks. Lastly, from the Cisco Learning Network, quote, this is quote, on February 3, 2026, Learn with Cisco will introduce exciting changes to its industry-leading certification portfolio, shaping the next generation of networking careers in the age of AI, network automation, and cybersecurity. Yes, our name is also new, end quote. So that was the first sentence of the press release about the revamp of Cisco certifications, clearly focusing on automation and AI. And they have been focusing on automation for a while. Remember DevNet? So basically, Cisco is rebranding its training and certification program as, quote, Learn with Cisco. And the idea here is that it's going to help they're going to help networking professionals stay relevant amid what we're seeing with AI right now, automation, of course, and public cloud. So they're streamlining the certification framework, focusing on, you know, the familiar certs like CCNA, CCNP, CCIE brands, but launching like updated tracks in automation, collaboration, and cybersecurity. This isn't new. This has been going on for a generation, right? We've seen new tracks being launched. Mm-hmm. This is interesting, though, because the DevNet program will be rebranded as CCNA, CCNP, and CCIE Automation.
I actually think that part of it actually kind of makes sense, Phil.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, if you look at what some of the other vendors do, they have the same thing. Like, you know, Juniper, for example, I know them a little better because I spent 10 years there. But, like, they'll have JNCIE, JNCIS, JNCIE for routing. They'll have one for enterprise. They'll have one for security. I think they now have one for automation, if I remember correctly, right? So it kind of makes sense to drop the DevNet certification namings and go to the CCNA, CCNP, CCIE that everybody already knows and loves and just have it be for doing automation, right? Doing DevNet type stuff.
Yeah. But, and though mine are all expired, I never got the CCIE. I failed. But I did have a CCNP in four different areas and then other certifications outside of Cisco in specific areas, just like you said. So those tracks make sense. And I think this rebranding makes sense. But I do wonder about this. The world of AI is so big and vast and it goes so deep that I'm interested to see what these certification like blueprints are actually going to look like when they come out. You know what I mean? Because you're not just talking about like vendor specific stuff or how to configure OSPF, which, you know, is relatively finite. There's still a lot to cover there, of course, and go all the way up to the CCIE level. But what will they choose to focus on and what are they going to omit, right? I mean, how often will they be updating these tracks?
That's part of it that I find interesting, right? Like to your point, the IETF RFCs for OSPF, like at least the basic foundation of how the protocol works that you'd want to learn to pass CCNA, haven't changed in a long time, right? So it's easy enough to build training material and build a certification that doesn't have to iterate very frequently. But AI is like the polar opposite of that, right? We're like, how many times? Every 2 weeks, we're talking about a new model on the show, right? I mean, like AI, the innovation is exploding, but I guess maybe the foundations of how you train a model and some of that isn't changing very fast. So maybe you could, or how you apply it to automation isn't, I don't know.
Well, that's what I think. I mean, the thing is that Cisco would update tracks every so often anyway, right? So you'd go from like CCNP voice to CCN collab 5 years later, 4 years later. And I think it's going to be generally the same here because supervised learning, unsupervised learning, you know, they are what they are and you're going to learn them. You're going to learn, you know, some Python. You're going to learn what a for loop is, you know, as far as the automation stuff. So you're going to learn some of those foundational things and then get more advanced as you get into the CCNP and CCIE. And those aren't coming out every 2 weeks. Those aren't changing every 2 weeks. And like a new model coming out, the underlying technology isn't all that different. the new model that comes out is either a greater scale, some tweaks to efficiency, and so it's or some updated training data, and you have a new model. But the underlying thing, like with a large language model, it's still a transformer, still back propagation and gradient descent, things like that. If it's more traditional AI ML, you're still doing like cosine similarity and DBScan and whatever other models you're applying. Those things haven't changed in 20 years either. So I think that Cisco does have a solid foundation for, you know, just pure education. And then, of course, you're going to have those updates. Like, for example, you know, MCP comes out, everybody jumps on that bandwagon. Do you go back and redo all your certifications to cover that? You know, no. So there's going to be some of those very, very up-to-date technologies that are going to be lacking. It's inevitable with what's going on, like you said, because things are moving quickly. But I think that's really neat. I am really interested specifically in the blueprints when they come out. I'm going to study them and see, like, okay, where do I need to go and fill in the gaps in my own knowledge? So, yeah.
It'll be interesting to keep an eye on, for sure, at least.
And now moving up to upcoming events. We don't have too many to discuss today, but we do have the Chicago Networking User Group, part of the USNUA, on June 5. So keep an eye out for that one if you're in the Chicagoland area. We have the Missouri Networking User Group, also part of the USNUA, on June 5, the same day. Justin, I believe that you are the leader of that particular event.
I'm one of the local organizers, and our mutual friends and friend of the show, Scott Robon, will be coming to do the keynote for us on his concept of total network operations. I just saw him here at AutoCon. He was telling me he's refreshing the material, so we'll get to hear some breaking news. It'll be the first time this particular talk has actually seen the light of day, so I'm excited to see where he takes that.
Excellent. Good. Yeah, looking forward to hearing about it. We have NANOG on June 9 through 11 in Denver, Colorado. And then, of course, one of the bigger events of the year in the networking space, Cisco Live, also June 9 through 11 in Las Vegas. Justin, are you going to be at either of those, or maybe bouncing between the two?
I thought about bouncing between the two of them. That seemed like a lot of time on a plane. So I'm going to do NANOG in Denver. I'm part of the mentorship committee there with NANOG. So I think I'll stay put and participate in that one this time around.
Great. All right. Well, those are the headlines for today. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.